John Gambling with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Yes, indeed. Here we are, 8 minutes after 8 o'clock on a Friday John Gambling show. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, John. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Week in summer. Traffic is low. Beaches are full. And everybody still take time out to listen.
Yeah. Can you add anything on the Throgs Neck Bridge problem that we haven't already passed along?
I think the answer to that is no.
Okay, fine. All right. Well, I just wanted to
curious. It's a serious thing. The alarm was at something like 4:30 this morning. It's netting under the bridge. Last I checked in was a couple minutes ago, one lane to Queens was open, so they are making progress. The bridge is not going to collapse or anything. It's not that kind of serious. It is very inconvenient for people. Trucks physically on Long Island in Queens, Bronx, or Nassau, Suffolk County can't get out.
Yeah, so.
But our fire department is on it, and it is.
Fireboat was there doing its deal.
That's why you have fireboats, all kidding aside. And an MTA facility, but, I'm not going to bash the MTA. It's on balance. Like, just tell you, subways work.
Right.
I always come back to the same thing.
They work very well, in fact. I took the subway a lot this week. They work really, really well. One thing that seemingly hasn't, at least for the last month, worked particularly well is Albany.
Or at all.
Or at all, yes. You can say that.
I think or at all.
What happened yesterday?
Well, number one, the governor deserves some credit for picking Dick Ravitch. He's as classy a guy as you could have. The governor has to pick somebody, and I don't know whether it's legal or not. That'll be the courts, I assume, will have to make a decision. The attorney general, Andrew Cuomo, said it was not. Our corporation counsel said he had real questions, but that's neither here nor there. The governor governor's tried a lot of things, and eventually something will work. What this did is maybe it was the impetus. I don't know, but one of the Democrats who became a Republican went back a long time ago. The other one that became Republican or voted with the Republicans,
with the conference,
went back, and then the past leadership of the Democrats, along with three or four, depending on how you count it, amigos, as they call themselves, then had a majority and took control. And last night they did do one thing that was good for us, a few things actually, but the main thing was passing the sales tax so that we can now go ahead and I will unfreeze the hiring freeze that we had. We still have to watch. We have big problems down the road, so we're not hiring willy-nilly, but we do need more police officers and firefighters and traffic agents and emergency 911 operators and school safety agents and crossing guards and medical technicians and 311 operators. We'd frozen the hiring on those, and we're not trying to expand the size of the workforce just to cover for attrition, so that we can keep services going.
Does that go into effect immediately? I mean,
It'll take. I don't know how long it takes to. We've got to schedule when the class of police officers, for example, who was supposed to start this past week. It may take a week or two to tell them when and figure it out.
But essentially,
yes, the answer to your question, go ahead. And with contracts, we had frozen all contracts. We're still going to work very hard to see which ones we really need and which ones we can do without. Because make no mistake about it, we're going to have to start right now economizing if we're going to get through 2011, which is a year from now. But if people say, oh, wait, maybe the economy will improve. Well, I hope the economy will improve. As a matter of fact, we're counting on the economy improving. As a matter of fact, I think the economy is here. But nevertheless, even then, we're going to have a difficult time. And the ways you get through it without chaos and really destroying and damaging is to start early and be judicious in what you spend. And if it turns out you could have spent more, it's a taxpayer's money, so you don't. That's not so bad if you could have spent more and you didn't. But we're chugging ahead.
And on the mayoral control issue, which I know is very important to you?
Was not brought up. I've always thought that the votes in the Senate on both sides of the aisle will be overwhelmingly in favor of renewing the bill that we negotiated. And keep in mind, we did negotiate with the Senate, and we negotiated with the Assembly. Senate stopped negotiating because they had their own chaos. Assembly did negotiate a bill with the Assembly. Includes most of the things the Senate had wanted. Assembly passed it, gone home. That bill will now, I assume today, be brought up and should pass overwhelmingly. And, you know, we can get on with it. In the meantime, the people that the five borough presidents appointed and the two that I appointed, and particularly Dennis Walcott, who was elected by them president of the board, I just wanted to particularly thank them for, you know, standing in. And, you know, we would have, if they didn't pass this, we would have gone on. But long-term, mayoral control is what you want, not a board where the mayor has a lot of influence, because down the road it just invariably leads to the lack of one point of accountability and how you coordinate. And look, a lot of city agencies, police department, health department, fire department, buildings department, all of these different departments work with the Board of Ed and with the Department of Education when you put back mayoral control. And one of the reasons it's all worked so well for the last few years and you've gotten these results is it isn't so much just holding one person accountable, although that is. And when somebody says, oh, well, if they're not, you know, if they're in the last term, how do you hold them accountable? The press is pretty, it really does hold you accountable.
I've noticed that.
Right. It's that everything coordinates to one point.
All right. Now, the bill before the Senate you are hoping will be passed, does it have it is not sunsetted?
My recollection is 6 years.
6 years.
Yeah. You know, why they just don't do it permanently, that's just not the way Albany works. You know, I argued, make it permanent. The city is a creature of the state. They can always come back and do anything to us that they want.
No matter what the rules are.
No matter what the rules are, they can just change them. But they like things that are sunsetted, because then you've got to fight and pay to get it, rather than they've got to stand up and take it away.
The former comment was the operative word.
Well, you know, everybody wants to be able, it's not pay in the sense of money,
no,
but they want their bill and right. the other issues. I think people don't understand that generally with legislators, whether it's a federal, state, or city level, they're all tied together. So if you want to put together enough votes to pass a bill on apples, grapefruits and oranges are being discussed in the background as well, because some people say, well, I care about grapefruits and oranges. Apples to me are neutral. I don't care. If you want me to vote for you, fine, but are you going to be helping me? And that's just the way democracy works.
All right. The month-long...
And it's not bad, incidentally, because it does... Yeah, it gets things done.
The month-long event in the Senate, it now seemingly is behind us. How do you view it, though, as we do go forward, as something that might be emblematic of a larger issue?
I think the partisanship in Washington and Albany is very damaging to good government. I've always thought that. As you know, I tried to convince people to have nonpartisan elections. Nothing wrong with parties, but partisan elections, most people don't ever get a chance to vote. It's just not democratic, plain and simple, when you have one party that dominates, and that is true, because it tends to be the real believers that come out in a primary, and the general public tends not to. And if one party so dominates, by the time you get to the general election, whoever has the majority nominations an automatic winner. They have to campaign, basically. Not true with the executive branch, president, governor, mayor, because there's a lot more coverage. Everybody knows. People come out. But when it comes to legislators, most people don't have any idea who they are voting for.
Is it and because of that, is it time for a constitutional convention here in the state of New York? And again, bring up things like term limits and other things?
Well, you know, you can always have a constitutional convention. The problem, at a national level as well, the problem always is that when you try to fix one thing, once you open the doors to change, there's an awful lot of special interests that typically will get their change put in as well.
For exactly the reasons you were just describing.
Yeah, and so, you know, every time anybody said at a national level, we need a constitutional convention, Most people, when thinking about it, say, nah, let's just leave it the way it is and try to work around it, because if we start go down that path, you don't know
Pandora's
where it's going to go.
Pandora's box.
Yeah, sure.
There.
Yeah, and in all fairness also, the city charter or the state or federal constitutions are the kind of laws that you want to leave for a long time and change only very seldom and only in... for really, really serious things. The trouble is your definition of really serious and mine are not.
Could be very different.
Yeah, sure. And you'd be wrong, but you have a right to it. And in the Constitution, we protect your right to be
thank
wrong.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
But
thank
your father and grandfather would have sided with me.
Yeah, I'm sure they probably would have. No question about it. They were much smarter than I am. 18 minutes after 8 o'clock, Mr. Mayor, hang on. Let me take my first break right here. And let me also remind you that we'll be taking your questions for the mayor at 800-321-0710. If you've got a question, get in the line early because it fills up quickly. 800-321-0710. Coming right back. 22 after 8 o'clock. Again, that telephone number, if you've got a question, 800-321-0710. Mr. Mayor, we've got some guests here in Studio 4 this week.
We have Roger Newman, who is our Commissioner for Veteran Affairs, and a new member of the team, Diane Billings-Buford.
Good morning to the both of you. Diane,
Perfect.
Roger.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You are here because the city has a new program going.
The city has a new program, and the reason both these guys are here is that Diane is responsible for NYC Service, this new organization where people can volunteer and do things to help the city and the people that live in the city, in this case come from the city. And Roger is here because this is something we're going to do for our veterans. There's roughly 8,000 from the city who are serving overseas in the armed forces right now, protecting you and me.
So what's the plan, Roger?
The plan is to do something really special for our troops. When I'm out talking to people, I get telephone calls, and the question I usually get is, what can we do to help? What can we really do to help? Well, what this does is it provides an opportunity for the average New Yorker to be able to make a donation and being guaranteed that donation that they make will go directly to one of our troops that's serving overseas.
You're talking about cash, or you're talking about...
No, we're talking about items. We're talking about items such as soap, deodorant, books, video discs, things like that. Things that are really... that we've had numerous requests from the service members.
That surprises me, because I would think our military would be taking care of those sort of things, but obviously because of the requests, they're not.
Well, I think the military takes care of the basic things that the soldiers need in order to do their job, but the smaller things, the things that really make them feel special, the things that keep them in touch with home, those are the things that we're talking about, the things that just aren't a part of the regular inventory that the military issues.
All right, Diane, from your point of view, how can New Yorkers pitch in here through you and your office?
Well, we're really excited. We are working hard to make it easy to pitch in. So if New Yorkers will just go to nyc.gov/service, you will see a full list of where they can drop off donations. You'll see a full list of the things that can be donated. We're really lucky enough to work with and leverage the knowledge of a not-for-profit ARMS. And so they have compiled for us a list of what New Yorkers really can give, what we can ship, the way it has to be packaged. And so all New Yorkers have to do is come to our website, call 311 if you don't want to go to the website, and donate. And we are also offering the opportunity for New Yorkers to sign up to volunteer to actually pack the packages.
I was going to ask you about that, if you were going to be doing that sort of thing as well.
Sanitation departments providing the bins and, kind of things that they could use, Yeah, you can joke about it, soft toilet paper, but the military version is probably not what you'd
have buy.
Right. Instant coffee and tea and soap and deodorant, movie DVDs, audio books, those kinds of things. Our military does get the things, hopefully, that they need to fight the war, but if you can make their lives a little bit easier. And also, I think it says that we care.
And we remember.
In the end, everybody wants recognition and respect, and these are young people who volunteered to put their lives at risk so that, you and I can do this radio show every morning and talk and be controversial, and in other places you couldn't do that, but we have the right to do it because for 235 years, Americans have been doing this.
Is this an open-ended program?
Well, no. It actually kicks off on the 13th, July 13th.
It will run through
August the 21st. And this is a real city effort. We actually, every police station will be involved. There will actually be donation boxes in each police station, each firehouse, and many other locations, including the Staten Island Ferry. All you need to do is go to 311 and find out a location that's closest to you. And go to that location. There is a flyer there that will actually show you all of the items that are appropriate. And I just want to add something. I was in the service. I was in Vietnam, 1967. And I remember very, very vividly how important it was to get something from home. And I remember really the feeling that people had whenever they stood at mail call. And they would come out with these big bags of mail, but their names didn't get called. So this is an opportunity for every New Yorker to reach out, do a small thing that would really make a big difference to one of our troops.
And, you know, there's a great organization called American Recreational Military Services, which if you make an acronym out of the first letters, it's ARMS, A-R-M-S. But American Recreational Military Services is going to pay for the postage for the mailing and all that sort of thing. And it's a great organization, and we're working with them. And between that and Roger's agency and Diane's NYC service, you really put it together.
Diane, how many people are you looking for? Do you have a number in mind that you think you need?
We're looking for between 70 and 80 volunteers on the packaging days. And all those days are listed on the website, and they won't commence until the drop-off day is complete. They begin August 24th.
All right. I think one of the logistics here, and maybe it's the sanitation people that will be doing this, is the transportation to your loading facilities. Just getting things. So many police departments, every police department, every firehouse. It's quite extraordinary.
It makes me very proud, though, of the commitment that the city has made and all of the people involved.
All right, good deal, and let us hope that this is a first of many. You know, if it's successful and works out really well, I think you're going to be overwhelmed by what New Yorkers will probably do for you.
Let's hope so.
Yeah, I think you're. Yeah, Diane, thank you very much. Great to see you, Roger. Good to
Diane
see you.
Diane is brand new, as I say to everyone, and I said to her, don't screw it up.
Right, I'm ready. Overwhelm me.
Diane, don't worry. He says that to everybody when they walk through
and
the
door. And they don't. Everyone, or virtually everyone. That's the way it works.
All right. Thank you both for coming in this morning and talking about that. I'll tell you what we do. If Joe Bartlett is ready, do we know if Joe's ready or not? Joe, are you there? We're about 30 seconds or so ahead of time. Let's go to Joe Bartlett and see if we get the latest news. That's the number, 800-321-0710. If you've got a question for Mayor Michael Bloomberg, we'll be getting to the phones in just a little bit, 800-321-0710. All right, Mr. Mayor, where should we go from here? Graffiti. I was interested to hear that yesterday you made an announcement that you got an initiative to clean the place up.
It is always a problem that we've reduced a lot of it, but there is still graffiti.
I see it growing.
I don't know if it's growing, but what is true is now that we have these cars, we drive all 6,000 miles of roads in the city once a month, which, 15 people takes a long time to drive 6,000 miles of roads. It's like from here to California and back.
They're using a hybrid.
Yeah, we use small cars and that sort
of
thing.
You do. I've seen them around, yes.
And think of it as another group of people whose only job it is to call 311 with problems. And graffiti and trash in the streets and potholes, those are the kinds of things that they look for. You call in, they call in. They do it automatically by hitting a button on their BlackBerry, which knows
GPS
where it is. Sure, it knows where it is, so it reports the location automatically. And each button's a different kind of problem. It does that automatically, so they can do it, very efficiently. And it's a good use of technology. And it really just goes right into the 311 system, as though you called and the operator types it in. This just puts it in automatically, because then we have, from there on downstream, hopefully the agency gets the right agency gets the information and hopefully fixes it. And we have a process to follow up to make sure that they do. There's so many, you just...
So if I call up 311 and say, hey, there's a building over here, the doors are all covered with graffiti, somebody will eventually in the system
take care. Here's the problem. If it's on public property, yes. If it's on private property, currently under the law, we have to get their permission to clean it off. It's private property, you can argue. What we're trying to do is to change the law is we give notice, and if they don't object... then we can do it. Because just a lot of people, you never can get in touch with them. Now, why would anybody object? Well, your definition of graffiti, they may define it as art, and they don't want you to. And it's their building. But the question is, who should notify? Some reporter asked me yesterday, well, is it constitutional? I'm sure we'll get sued, and you'll find out in court. But if that were to work, it would make it a lot easier to clean the graffiti. Because the two things that keep us from getting some of that graffiti off is three things. One's not reported. Number two, in the winter, you can't do it because the chemicals don't work when it's too cold. And number three, if it's private property, which most of it is on, we've got to wait for... get permission to do it. And if the landlord never answers, you can't do anything about it. But graffiti isn't one of just these harmless things. It really does debase the whole neighborhood. It takes out, it changes what you think about it. It inherits property values. And I saw in the paper today, there was a woman who pleaded guilty to putting graffiti on lots of buildings in a number of boroughs, and she worked a deal with the DA to get 6 months in jail.
Yeah, I saw that story, yeah.
Yeah, instead of three different 6 months, they let her serve the
plus
three...
plus $6,000 in damages.
Whatever it is, so you can go to jail for this stuff. Now, this is one in a more an egregious case, but... and then yesterday, when we did this, I watched him paint over a wall of a Mexican restaurant. The owner was there.
Thrilled, probably.
Oh, yeah, he was ecstatic.
You know, it's interesting, again, not to spend too much
time... He didn't invite me in for a meal, but that's okay.
A couple of tacos or whatever. A couple of years ago, I went to the privilege of going to the Czech Republic. And one of the things that was so noticeable was that there is a tremendous amount of graffiti in Europe. And in fact, most of the people I was with were surprised at this. And the lack of graffiti that we have is so noticeable when you finally see it all over the place.
Well, when I see it, when I'm driving down the street and I see some, I call 311. But, I don't do... I don't look out the window all the time. I'm got to work and on the phone and catch up and talk to people. I'm just one guy. We have these 15-odd people out driving the 6,000 miles. They help. So I don't know if there's more graffiti or we're just better at reporting it, but the number of cases that we have to work on is up about 60%.
Hate to keep bringing this up, but there's more news on the World Trade Center, Silverstein and the Port Authority. Is there a deal there as reported in the papers this morning or no?
We are not going to negotiate in public, but I think the issue is getting all of the different parties together. It's like a broken record. Three different governors from New York, three different governors from New Jersey. During all of that, some things have been going along pretty well. It is phenomenally complex, enormous number of stakeholders, a phenomenally difficult building plan and a small piece of property that doesn't try and do an awful lot of things. And let me just say that Bob Lieber and his team are trying to work, and with some help from Shelley Silver, to get the parties that have a vested interest here together, and hopefully we'll come up with something that works for everyone.
And being in the neighborhood here and passing it every day, I see that there's finally some movement going on the demolishing of the Deutsche Bank building.
Well, originally they were getting rid of the pollution, of the toxic stuff in it, decontaminating is the word, and tearing down the building at the same time. Then we had that terrible fire where two firefighters were killed. So then they stopped, and the next plan was, and this is run by the LMDC, which I have, as you know, argued should go away. It's not that the LMDC and the people in it are bad. It's we just don't need another level of bureaucracy. Anyways, they are just about finished.
The abatement process.
The abatement, the decontamination. Then the building, then the wreckers go in and take it down, and it will come down very fast. Because it's just a lot easier to do when you don't have to worry about other people working in the building at the same time. Oh, well, before I forget, one of the things that the state Senate did last night was pass another part of our tax bill, which gets rid of the unincorporated business tax, which is a tax on something like 17,000 small businesses. It only takes about $25 million out of the economy in terms of revenue for the city, but it really hurts all these small businesses. And if you went out and started John Gambling and Company, one person or two or three person company, which is what we want to have happen, we don't want you personally, but
no, I understand that
because that's the future of our city. Small businesses become big businesses, and they're here, and they employ employ half the people in our city. But you get double taxed, and it was never fair. And so this really does make a big difference for these freelancers.
Along those lines, this week you also announced an initiative when it comes to media as an industry, which is so huge here in the New York City area. And you can explain what you said. But are you very concerned? I mean, is there indication that people are moving out?
No. What is true is that we used to sit back and say, well, we're in New York. They don't have any choice. And today they have lots of choices, not just in the United States, but around the world. It is a very all these businesses are or the cities are in competition to have these industries. New York is the fashion capital of the world. For example, we have double the number of fashion houses that exist in Paris. We want to keep it that way. Media, this is the media capital of the world. We want to keep it that way and have it grow. IT, you know, between Microsoft and Google and Thomson Reuters and Bloomberg, I mean, these are companies that have thousands of people here in the city. And you think of this as California business? No. There's no reason why we can't have this film theater and film and television. No reason why it shouldn't be done here. These are the kinds of things that we've got to focus on and make sure that new companies will come here, that it's easy to start a company, and that existing companies thrive here. That's our future. That's the jobs for our citizens. That's the tax base to provide services. And what we're trying to do is proactively find ways to help each of these big industries.
And on this one specifically, you've actually offered at a lower rate space, office
there's,
space?
There's a variety of things. You know, you find somebody who will take some space that maybe they have had trouble renting and cut it up so small. Lots of small startups can be in the space at relatively low rents. Permitting, make it easier. I mean, there's just a whole bunch of things. Training, putting together, you know, buyers and sellers and companies and employees, all of that.
How does an entrepreneur, a business owner in that definition, how do they interact with, how do they get in touch with the city to get those things?
It's easy. What's the number you call?
Oh, my goodness gracious. Not 311.
You call 311. They will direct you and connect you to Small Business Services, okay, an agency that actually does it. That's the whole idea of 311 or nyc.gov, because everybody has the same question. Here, you didn't know, and this is your business to know what's going on. You talk about it 5 days a week. The average person knows an awful lot less than you do. But there's one answer. Now, 311 doesn't do everything all the time, and they certainly don't always do it perfectly, but it's a great place to start.
Okay, you've kind of touched on it here. What do you make of, and I know this is not your purview, I'm just looking for your opinion here, it was announced today, or will be shortly, the rebirth of General Motors in its new form. Good, bad, and different?
You know, only time will tell. I think from a political point of view, the government probably didn't have much choice other than to help them. I think Ford, Bill Ford, and the people that work for the Ford Motor Company deserve an awful lot of credit because they were able to get through the tough economic time without government help. They're about to, I listened to Bloomberg Radio this morning, had a story that this year they looks like they will sell more cars than General Motors, first time since the Model A was their big seller back in the early 30s. You know, just if you run your business well, competition from around the world and varying economies don't have to kill you. You know, Bill Ford, who I've met a few times, I actually talked to him back in 2002, 2003, and he said, you know, when he gets Ford Motor Company turned around, he thought about going into public service. So he's a smart guy, and it'd be great if he did it. And, you know, I'm sure it's a very tough business, but, you know, we've lost an awful lot to overseas. In the case of the automobile companies, the big three lost a lot to other companies who are American companies. They're here. Somebody criticized us for trying a new kind of police car, Nissan something or others, and some reporter said, why don't you continue to buy those American-made cars from Ford and Chevy that we've been buying? And Commissioner Kelly pointed out that all those cars are made in Canada, but the Nissans are made in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, your definition of, in this day and age, what's an American company? Well, if it's American jobs in Tennessee, is that an American company? You know, I don't know who the stockholders are. It may say that it's a Japanese or Korean company, but there's a lot of Americans that own the stock in those companies. So is that the definition? What I know is that if America has a workforce that's unstoppable, it is the best, and the only danger is that we try to get in the way of them being flexible and changing with the times. And I think that is what, in fact, happened in Detroit. We should continue to let the marketplace work. American, particularly if we have more immigrants coming here, because immigrants fuel the fire and give us more information and a new spirit and everything. I'd bet on America every time.
You also feel that way because I read your op-ed piece about the health care situation, that you believe that what the president is proposing or something close to it is maybe a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, I think the devil's in the details, but, you know, the federal government is, you know, if you remember, Bill Clinton tried to work on health care, and it was Hillary and Ira Magaziner who had a plan, and there was a firestorm over it. Keep in mind, most of what they proposed, eventually the private sector just did it anyways. So,
which would be the better of the two, don't you think?
Yeah, there is a place for. I believe in the marketplace and in private enterprise. There's a place in the marketplace for government to do things, because some things are just uneconomical for the private sector, but we want to have that service. So, for example, you know, policing and firefighting, you want those are government services, an army, the government services you want, but for control reasons. We have public hospitals and public housing because not everybody can afford market rate stuff, and yet we want to take care of those people. We want people sleeping in the streets. We don't want people going without medical care. The devil's always in the details. I keep saying the same thing again and again. The problem with health care is, why are we spending $2,000 or $3,000 more per capita and getting a life expectancy a few years less than they do in Western Europe, but nobody really wants to look at that. And, you know, it's also hard for people to understand. If you want to say, well, you know, we'll measure the quality of care, it's not so easy. A hospital that has, you know, I would bet you that a big teaching hospital or that focuses on cancer, more people die in that hospital of cancer than in your local community hospital.
That doesn't
in this country.
Really mean that.
That's where people that get cancer go, right? So, you know, it's very hard. The best doctors who take the most difficult cases are going to have more deaths. That's, you know, so it's really hard to measure. But look,
how does that affect?
At least the president's trying to do something.
How do you think that the plan that the president is proposing might affect New York City and its health?
Well, that's what we're worried about, because some of these things we use to we use funds to finance graduate medical education, for example. Now, you can say, well, Medicaid wasn't designed to do that. Well, that may be, but over the years it evolved that that's the way as you do it. If you cut that, then who's going to pay for all of this medical education? Doctors, you know, most people go to medical school. Think about it. 4 years of college, 4 years of medical school, 2 years of internship.
I'm thrilled people want to do it.
And you know, you don't become a doctor to make a lot of money. Just the debts that they incur and the investment they make. One of the things that's terrible in this country is we have doctors from around the world come here for great education, and then we don't give them a green card. And in lots of parts of our country, there are no local doctors. You know, you have to drive a few hours for a local doctor, and sometimes you're not going to live that long. You have to get to a doctor pretty quickly if you have a stroke, for example. This is just craziness. We should open, if people come get a graduate education here, not just in medicine, but in sciences and the arts and everything else, if they get their education here, we should just automatically, those are people for sure you should give a green card to. Just automatically. That isn't even close. This is really crazy.
All right, Mr. Mayor, sit tight here. When we come back, 800-321-0710 is the number to call. Mike's obviously been pretty tough on you folks. We've got a line open, 800-321-0710, 800-321-0710 for your questions for Mayor Michael Bloomberg. We will be right back. 5 minutes before 9 o'clock, Mr. Mayor, Coney Island, the circus is in town.
Circus is still in town. We talked about this a few weeks ago. I was lucky enough to go there and see some of the animals and take pictures with all of the high wire and contortionists and all the things. It's fascinating. All young people, you know, they really care, and they seemed happy to get a picture with the mayor. I don't know why, but they seem to. Anyways, they were
pictures with the mayor.
What is unique here is this: it's a Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus, and it's playing under a big top. Usually, it is at Madison Square Garden, but this summer it's Coney Island. Goes through Labor Day, September 7th, as I remember. Shows Wednesday through Sunday, and Ticketmaster, of course. You know, you can get tickets, and we expect actually close to 250,000 people to go this summer. And it'll put more than $10 million into the Coney Island economy. And they hired 100-150 local residents for the summer.
There you go. Brooklynites swinging from the tent.
Yeah, and they've given some free tickets for the Housing Authority residents and, you know, working with the borough president, Marty Markowitz, and to get some tickets for low-income families. But, you know, it's another good use for Coney Island.
Got you right. Let's go to the phones here. Michael in Manhattan, you've got Mayor Michael Bloomberg's ear. Mr. Mayor, pick that up, please. Michael, go.
Hey, good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning.
Quick question for you. I'm a recent college graduate. I'm working right now in the financial district, and I'm from Long Island. I was just thinking about purchasing my first condo in the city and just wanted to get your take on what you think the real estate market's going to do in the city, specifically in the financial district.
Well, I don't know. You know, I'm not nobody can predict the future, but downtown's a great place to live. You've got wonderful transportation, great views, you know, lots of nice old buildings and new buildings together. I think the real answer, Michael, is if you're a dealer, it's one thing, and if you're going to live there, it's another thing. So if you find an apartment that you really would like to live in and you can afford it, it's a good use of your money. If you're a speculator, have absolutely no idea. I've always thought that New York will never go down as much as other places, because we don't have the overbuilding. There's a reason for people wanting to live here. Rents are down 18-20%, as I remember last time I looked at numbers. But there are some new buildings coming on stream where they've wanted to sell them, and now they're turning them into rentals. But, you know, you look and you say, oh, how are they going to fill all these buildings? And you realize, you know, we have 3.5 million buildings in New York City. So it is so big. I can't think of a better place to live, Michael. There are, you know, great neighborhoods, all of five boroughs downtown. When I used to go downtown, even further south than City Hall, was when I first came to New York, and I worked on Wall Street. And it was dead at night. Today, there's baby carriages and bands.
I'm here a lot later. At night, early in the morning.
Yeah, I mean, it really is quite amazing
what's
happened.
Michael, thank you very much. Let's go to Bill in Brooklyn. Bill, what's your question for the mayor? Get right to it, please.
Good morning to both of you, and Your Honor, I'd like to commend you on all your great work, and since you've been in office, and I hope that you'll continue to be in office, you'll continue to serve the city as well as you've been. My topic is on private education versus public education. I'm a father of four children, and I'll be sending my children to private school this upcoming September, as we do every year. It'll cost me upwards of $55,000 to send my children to school. If I were to send my children to public school...
Bill, what's the question, because we're almost out of time.
Well, the question is, what does the mayor see that the city or the federal government or any type of government will be doing for private education to alleviate the pressures of the rising cost of private education?
What we're doing in this, some of it's these private schools are religious based, and there's a separation of church and state issue. Some of it is that the city doesn't have a lot of money to do everything, but we are trying to help. We provide books and nurses and busing and those kinds of things for a lot of schools, not for all of them. But, you know, our real answer is that the city's obligation is public schools, and we're sinking as much money as we have into that to make those the greatest schools. And if people choose to go to private schools, that's okay. But, you know, the city's money is going to go to the public schools. I think that's the real answer in the end. And I'm sympathetic. It's hard. Wait till you get to college. You're going to, the kids, you're going to really have a problem.
You're going to think 55 grand is cheap.
Right.
You're absolutely right. Mr. Mayor, on unfortunately. Time is not. It is expensive, and it doesn't last very long. Ours is up for again this week. I look forward to seeing you next Friday.
Have a nice weekend. If you're going to the beaches or pools, don't go in the water unless there's lifeguards.
All right, Mr. Mayor. Enjoy your weekend as well. That's it for us here on the John Gambling Show. Thank you all for your participation. We'll catch up with you on Monday. Have yourself a great weekend.